Hello, from the studios of 2RPH, welcome to another edition of AbleQuest, where we examine assistive technology and related subjects for people living with disabilities. I'm Annette Rosen, and this is AbleQuest. Today, we present the second instalment of our program on sleep apnea. In the first program, Nikki Lindemann interviewed Dr. Brendan Yee, a sleep physician from the Wilcock Institute of Research in Sydney. Dr. Yee described the presentation and symptoms of sleep apnea, some of the possible causes, and the importance of diagnosis and treatment. In particular, untreated sleep apnea can be implicated in cardiovascular disease and in compromised daytime alertness and poor mental health. Today we continue with the interview to learn about the various treatment options using currently available technology. Following this, we will have the opportunity to hear firsthand what it is like to use some of these appliances from two of our very own 2RPH volunteers, Sally Thompson and myself. So now let's hear more from Dr. Yee.
Can you tell us a little bit about what treatments are available today?
Again, like anything, it's looking at the big picture and looking at, strategizing your treatment plan for patients. I guess if you've got patients that are symptomatic or patients that have severe forms of obstructive sleep apnea, then the gold standard treatment is this treatment called CPAP, which has been around since 1981. In fact, there's an Australian who invented this in 1981 called Colin Sullivan. He actually lives in Balmain. It's a bit of advertising here for Sydney. So he invented this treatment. And what CPAP is it's a simple technique. It's essentially a mask that you wear at nighttime, which is strapped on, and it's connected up to a hose, which connects up to a machine that essentially blows an ear. So it's called CPAP, which means continuous positive airway pressure. And I tend to tell patients it's like a reverse vacuum cleaner. And all it does is basically blow an ear through the mask, which is strapped on at nighttime, and it basically holds open your throat at nighttime. That's all it does. And it's a very effective treatment, and we tend to think of it as our gold standard treatment. It works really well, and it does reverse all the complications of obstructive sleep apnea. Now, one of the issues, though, with CPAP is not everyone likes using it. It can be difficult to get used to, and there are some things that can predict the use of this type of device. So that's one of the treatments. Other treatments we have is looking at risk factors. I think I'm going to go back to the obesity equation again. I think, you know, a lot of the times we deal with the complications such as sleep apnea with obesity, and we don't actually deal with obesity itself. So in patients that have maybe milder forms of sleep apnea or patients that don't want to use CPAP, then sometimes we focus a lot on their weight, because losing weight can help sleep apnea in most patients. And there's some studies that support that. So obviously looking at risk factors like weight, sometimes people only get sleep apnea when they're lying on their back. Sleeping on your side at nighttime can be quite useful. Avoiding alcohol at nighttime, because alcohol can relax the breathing, particularly the breathing muscles around your throat. So that can be useful. Sometimes people try things called mouth guards at night time, and these essentially work by pushing your jaw forward at night. And these can be an alternative to using the CPAP device, and they work reasonably well, but not on everyone. It's one of the problems we have with these types of devices. But they seem to be much more convenient than CPAP. But again, it's something that would have to be discussed with the person who's looking after you, the pros and cons of using these types of devices. Occasionally, surgery has a role in sleep apnea, selecting the right patients that have surgically amenable sleep apnea. I think I'm mainly talking about adults, and children with sleep apnea, and children can get sleep apnea. Having large tonsils and adenoids are usually a big risk factor. Mm. And usually when you remove tonsils and adenoids in children with sleep apnea, they usually get better. But that's not the case in adults, unfortunately. So that's why surgery doesn't have a major role, but in select patients it can be quite useful, particularly in patients that don't or can't use the traditional types of treatments.
And have you had good results? Can this thing be cured? Is that kind of word?
I guess like anything, you have exceptions. I have a few patients, and probably I would say less than 10% of my patients, that are so determined to lose weight that they don't want to use the CPAP machine, they don't want to use the mouth guard, that they lose a significant amount of weight and their sleep apnea basically goes away. Mm. And that's a fantastic outcome, but that's more of an exception than the rule. I guess there's not many things in medicine where you can actually improve people's quality of life within a night. And I guess with CPAP, you can get that. And I'm always surprised when you have patients come back after they've been on CPAP for a few nights and they said it's just a new world and the curtains have lifted. But I guess that's, like anything, that's what we aim for. But a lot of the times it can be difficult using CPAP. So look, end of the day, it's finding the right treatment option for your patient and looking at the pros and cons of the different options.
Presumably then with the weight loss portion of your patients, exercise would help, or perhaps for all patients.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate of exercise, not because of the Olympics were on recently, but I think the benefits of exercise, not only from a sleep apnea point of view, but from a cardiovascular, metabolic point of view as well. And my take on exercise is it can help you lose weight, but there are one or two studies now showing that with exercise, independent of weight loss, can improve sleep apnea. Now, we don't know what the mechanism is regarding that, but there have been some studies showing that a formal exercise program, independent of the weight loss, may improve sleep apnea in some people. Not marked changes, but some significant changes nonetheless.
Any plans for the future? Is there any research going on that excites you in this field?
Look, I think like anything, what we don't do very well is we don't individualize treatments that well. Mm. And I think one of the things that hopefully will come out is that when we assess patients, we will have better instruments and tools to assess patients and saying that using this treatment, you're going to have this amount of success. Using this treatment, you have this amount of success. So what we're trying to do is if we can phenotype patients, meaning we can describe patients in better detail, then hopefully we'll be able to prescribe better treatment options for them. That's what I think the Holy Grail is. Obviously, what we would like is a pill to take to get rid of our sleep apnea. I think most people crave for that. Sure. But at this stage, it's a very difficult proposition. I think even though sleep apnea, when you conceptualize it, is quite a simple thing, it's the back of your throat blocking off. The problem with thinking of it like that is that the back of your throat is actually quite complex. Not only is it important for breathing, but the throat's important for speech and swallowing. Mm. And other things as well. And there are lots of different muscles there, and they all have different types of activities and actions. And that's why we really haven't found a tablet that can target the muscles without causing any other problems. Now, what's the future? There's a lot of research looking at alternative treatments for sleep apnea. There has been a bit of literature.
I was going to come on to that.
Yeah, so these devices, essentially you wear them at night time, and they're kind of like a strip that you wear in your nostrils. And they act as kind of like a one-way valve. So what happens is you can breathe in normally, but basically you can't breathe out through these. So that causes a slight increase in the pressures within your throat. And that theoretically opens up your throat at night time and improves sleep apnea. So look, these devices have been studied in reasonable types of studies. But like anything else, they work in some patients and don't work in others. And like a lot of research, it's translating that research from trials to what happens out there in the real world. With these trials, they were very select in which patients they use for the trials. So a lot of the times they've excluded patients in these trials that we would probably be seeing from day to day. So I think finding the right patients, it's kind of confirms my thing that we need to phenotype people very well. Mm. There was some other studies showing that there's a study where they've looked at isolating one of the nerves that supply one of the important throat muscles and putting a stimulator on them can be quite useful. But again, this is probably more of the research domain. But it's finding which patient would want to go down that pathway. So you kind of have a little pacemaker attached to your hypoglossal nerve, which is one of the nerves that supply one of the important throat muscles for sleep apnea. Interesting stuff, but not quite on the market
very
at this stage.
Very cutting edge, yes, indeed. Well, that's been very fascinating. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you for asking,
Brendan,
me.
And we hope you will listen to the program when it comes on.
I certainly will. Thanks very much.
And that was Dr. Brendan Yee, sleep physician at the Wilcock Institute of Research in Glebe. Dr. Yee calls CPAP the gold standard of treatment, But how easy is it to use, and what is its impact on quality of life? I've tried to use it and was unsuccessful. I kept waking up in the middle of the night, getting caught up in the hose and the mask. And through the Wilcock Institute, I was able to participate in a research study on the mandibular advancement splint, the MAS, which is a mouth guard. Fortunately, by being part of a research study, I was able to get a splint for free because it can cost up to $2,500. It has to be custom made, and you don't know if it's going to work until you try it, and it is not as successful as the CPAP. It's very compact. When I travel, I just fit it in my handbag. So to find out more about the CPAP, I'd like to introduce you to Sally Thompson to tell us a bit about her experiences. Sally, can you tell us how long have you been using a CPAP machine?
I've been using it about 4 years, and the reason I started is because I was falling asleep watching movies going out, and my friends used to tease me about it.
Yes, a very common indicator.
Yeah, and my doctor sent me and had a sleep test, and I failed dismally, and then I was put on the CPAP machine, which is quite threatening, really, because it's a huge mask over your face and, as you say, the cord. So I've got that, and now I couldn't sleep without it. And as you said, I recently went on a trip to India, and because my machine now is 4 years old, I actually hired a machine so that was less than a year old so that I could insure it, so that if it was stolen or lost, it's sort of an insurance policy that I could at least claim on it. It wasn't mine. I'd still have mine to come home to. Mm-hmm. This worked well, except I took my mask, but I didn't take the gear to hold it on.
It's not much use then, is it?
It's not much use at all. And I arrived in Kuala Lumpur for 16 hours and spent most of that 16 hours finding a place to find it. But I should have done one simple thing. I should have just Googled sleep apnea. And this is for those who've already got sleep apnea and if they lose something when they are travelling, just Google sleep apnea and the city that you're in and see where they have a place and ring around to the numbers that are there. And I've certainly found something then.
Mm. So you've adapted quite well to your new bed partner.
I certainly have. Well, 4 years, I would hope so.
Yes.
I sometimes wonder, though. It'd be nice without it.
I know. But as you said, it gets very difficult to sleep without it. Well, things have certainly changed. Several years ago, I travelled overseas with a friend who had an early version of CPAP. It was big, heavy and very noisy. While she slept well, the noise kept me awake, and we had an extra piece of luggage to cart around. And I know today it's much smaller. How was your experience travelling with it, Sally?
Well, I've travelled quite a bit with it. It takes up about a third of my hand baggage. I won't let it out of my sight. I've had a few arguments in airports, but it's great.
So thank you, Sally, for joining us today and sharing your experiences.
My pleasure.
There are several online support forums for sleep apnea sufferers. You can find them by Googling sleep apnea or CPAP. You've been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. I'm Annette Rosen. Thank you for listening, and goodbye till next time.